This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. There's something that I'd like you all to know about, whether you're in California or in any other state, because this is very important. Although this is written by the people connected with the California State Bar. It's called Kids and the Law, an A to Z Guide for Parents. It's the kind of thing that I believe that any parent, wherever you are, can benefit from, the kinds of issues and the kinds of problems that your kids can get involved with. This guide is designed to give parents of children a basic overview of some of the laws that apply to children, laws created in many instances to help safeguard youngsters at school, in part-time jobs, and at play. And free copies will be sent to you wherever you are, in any state. It doesn't matter. Let me give you the State Bar website in case you're interested, and I'll repeat it as we go through the program, www.calbar.ca.gov/public/pamphlets.aspx. So there you are, and I'll repeat that. Let me tell you who I have here. Some very significant people. I've worked with a couple of them. They're very experienced in the area of law related to children. Bob Perez, he is now the legal reviewer of the State Bar's Consumer Guides. He's a former assistant executive director of the California State Bar. He's a retired San Francisco assistant district attorney. Jeff Hayden, who is the California Board of Legal Specialization Criminal Law Certified Specialist. He's also president of the San Mateo County Bar Association. And third, but certainly not least, is Andrew Kane, Supervising Attorney, Legal Advocates for Children and Youth, the Law Foundation of Silicon Valley. He's a certified specialist in juvenile law and child welfare by the National Association of Counsel for Children. For those of you who are listening to the live program, I will give to you the call a lawyer number, because I want to make sure that you will be able to call in and speak to attorneys off the air. We do this every month, usually the fourth Wednesday of the month. And this is for people who are listening to this program on October 28th. It's 415-841-4127, 415-841-4127 for call a lawyer. And as we get into the program, let me give you the number that you can call to speak to my guests on the air. Again, this is the live program on October 28th. We'll be taking calls on the air at about 7:30 Pacific California time, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Let's do this, everybody. I want to turn to Jeff Hayden. We're going to talk a bit about smoking. We're going to talk a bit. He's going to talk a bit about driving. And we'll start with that, if you would, Jeff.
Sure. One of the things that most people don't realize is that when you're talking about people under 21, smoking or drinking means a loss of your license. It doesn't matter if you're driving a car. Any offense, any conviction or adjudication, if they're under 18, that involves drugs or alcohol, and you have a loss of driver's license for a year. Even if you're driving and you're substantially below the legal limit, if there is a measurable amount of alcohol, that is a one-year loss of license.
Even if it's, what, 0.01?
0.01. If they can measure it, you lose it.
Wow. That's something to be very careful about. One of the other things under California law is that in terms of smoking, let's say we've got somebody who legally can smoke. What's the age to legally smoke, to be able to legally smoke in California?
Now, when you say smoke, I assume you mean tobacco.
Yeah.
And that would be 18.
18. All right. So if you're 18 and you're driving and you have a license in California, if you've got a younger person in the car, it's illegal under California law to smoke in the car, right?
Under the same law that makes it illegal to smoke in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Many communities are taking it a step further. It's illegal to smoke in your apartment or in open spaces other than within the four walls of your home.
Mm-hmm.
That has not been made state law yet. I'll refrain from my own views on that.
Okay.
But yes, it is illegal in the confined space of a car to be smoking when you have somebody who's a minor within the car.
What about marijuana? Where are we on that?
Marijuana is moving in two directions at once. On the one hand, we're very close to a point where I could foresee it being legalized. But it's not there. That initiative, if we do go by way of initiative, is not yet on the ballot. So we don't know if it's going to affect juveniles or not. If it's legal for all ages, we can forget about what I'm saying. But the current state of the law is that it's still not legal. And even though it's been an infraction, it is an offense involving somebody under 21. It involves a controlled substance.
Mm-hmm.
Per se, even a marijuana infraction for simple possession, again, loss of driver's license for a year.
For the whole year?
For the whole year.
Incredible. Incredible. By the way, let me let you all know that this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which has 11 fields of specialty, not only criminal law but family law, which of course are involved with this program, but 9 others. Additional funding for this segment is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and for the program itself, it's also funded by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Bob Perez, let me turn to you. You have now become and are the legal reviewer for the State Bar's guides. Right now there are 3. I guess they're working on doing more. There's one for older persons in California, and a couple of months ago I did a program on that. There's also one that is if you're over 18, I believe. Bob, you and I met yesterday at my office to talk about what we might include in the first half hour, which is the statewide version of the program. Talk a little bit about bullying, would you?
Thank you for having us over on this issue. And the concern that I've had over the years has been that the issue of bullying has become more prominent, particularly when you talk about school behavior and performance. Bullying was never something that we experienced as youngsters, but the times have changed so much that now we hear constantly, whether it be in the media or the news or whatever, about children coming home and suffering some emotional distress, either because of something that's going on at school, and the parents have little information on which to go on to see what's disturbing the child. It turns out that in a lot of these cases, you have what we would call the internet bullying that goes on, and it seems that the technical advances that we've made by way of social interaction, using computers, using cell phones, has now put us in a dilemma of where the parent can perhaps protect the child against it. And the discussion that I wanted to get into is what protections, if any, exist to stop any kind of a bullying, either by a child at school, a playmate, and what burden does it place on the school to try to investigate and try to prevent that from continuing. And that was my suggestion in bringing this topic up, because I wasn't sure where we were. We were as attorneys in addressing that issue.
And what does the guide, the Kids in the Law guide, say that parents should do if they understand that their child is being bullying?
To have some interaction with the child to determine directly, in conversing with the child, on what is taking place in the school. And if moving from that to the school itself to see what the child's performance has been, and if the school, in fact, has noticed that there's been any change in behavior or any interaction with other children that may be affecting them as well. And then going from there to see what has to be done in terms of addressing that issue.
And this is something, correct me if I'm wrong, under California law, if there is bullying at the school and the school has good evidence that one child is bullying another, what is the sanction that the school can do with respect to that child who is the bully?
I think that the school has to really examine all facets of what has occurred, either by interviewing the child or interviewing other youngsters who may have experienced the transactions or the interaction between the child and the person who is alleged to have been bullying, and then taking that into consideration and making a determination one way or the other as to whether further action is necessary to protect the child, and also to see if there can be some set of rehabilitation of the child that is given to that kind of behavior.
I want to come to Andrew Keen in just a minute for actually Andrew's a specialist in child welfare, and I want to ask him what comments he has about bullying in school. All right, everybody, it is our Call a Lawyer night, and I see our attorneys are talking to each other. I want them to be talking to you. That number is 415-841-4127, 415-841-4127. Please call and talk with them. We have topics of workers' compensation law, family law, which if you call and leave your name and phone number, I will have the certified specialist call you back on that. For criminal law, we have Garrett Rutgers. For landlord-tenant law, we have Sal Timpano. For employment law, we have Susan Bluer. For tax law, real estate, and he's also a real estate broker, we have Frank Adam. For patent law, aviation law, lemon law, we have Ron Rohde. So if you'd like to talk to any one of them, it's 415-841-4127. No obligation on your part. It's a great public service these attorneys are performing. This is Your Legal Rights. If you tune in just a little bit late, we're talking about a very fine consumer guide that's been put together by the State Bar of California, which, in my opinion, and I've been practicing law for 50 years, it's going to be helpful for parents, whether you're in California or in any other state of the United States, to take a look at some of the issues that are confronting kids and what you as parents might be able to do, and use this as a kind of guide for yourself, whether you're a parent in California or not. My guests are very knowledgeable people. Bob Perez, who is a former assistant executive director of the State Bar, a former, actually retired San Francisco assistant district attorney. Jeff Hayden, legal specialist in criminal law, also president of the San Mateo County Bar Association. Andrew Kane, who is the supervising attorney for Legal Advocates for Children and Youth, the Law Foundation of Silicon Valley. Andrew is a former chair of the family law section of the State Bar. Andrew, have you had dealings with any of your of children on bullying?
Yes, Chuck, and first, thank you for having me on tonight.
My pleasure.
One of the practice areas of our office is education advocacy, and that can take on many forms, but one specific is we have dealt with the bullying issue, and we sometimes will come at it from both sides. We may be working with the student who's alleged to have been the bully on a special education issue or some other type of educational services, and we may be working in a different scenario with a student who has been the victim of bullying behavior, also trying to get special education services in place. And to build in three ways on what Bob was saying, the first is that when you have a student who has been alleged to engage in bullying behavior, I think it's critical that we look at whether or not this is a student who may have some learning needs or learning disabilities, special education needs in particular, and try to make sure that the school has done its job to identify whether those issues are there such that that student could get the appropriate services, so hopefully they no longer engage in that type of behavior. The second would be that schools have an obligation to make sure that their students are able to learn in a safe environment. And so if there is an indication that a particular school or the school district is not taking steps to ensure that the students are able to go to class, participate in extracurricular activities in a safe environment, then that's a point where organizations should be called on to work with the school site staff or even the district to ensure that proper policies are in place to address the bullying. And then the third issue, and this goes back to a little bit of what I was saying in my first point, is that it's always important to look at the issue holistically and not just about the bullying, and making sure that proper resources are in place at the school to work with these kids, both the student alleged to engage in the bullying as well as the student who's been the victim of bullying, providing counseling, providing academic supports, and I think that will go a long way to addressing the problems.
Your foundation, the Law Foundation of Silicon Valley, and your section that you're the supervising attorney, Legal Advocates for Children and Youth, how does your office get involved with these children? How does this occur? Are these referred to you by different schools, or how does it happen?
So if the question relates just to the piece of our office that does educational advocacy, it could be in a number of ways. We work with our county child welfare office and our county's juvenile probation department to provide education-related legal services to kids who either are in the juvenile justice court or in the juvenile dependency court. We also have a phone intake line through which parents or even students themselves or interested parties can call and ask for us to provide a specific legal service around the education need. But in general, with all of our practice areas, I would say in very shorthanded terms, we are either appointed by the court to provide a particular legal service in a certain type of case, or through that intake line I just referenced, we will get somebody to call to request our services, or we periodically go out in the community and offer legal clinics or do general outreach to make sure that people in the community are aware of our services.
And the community is Santa Clara County, is it not?
That is correct.
Okay.
We will serve any child or family that's in Santa Clara County, provided it's one of our legal practice areas.
Jeff Hayden, let me turn to you. One of the things that you wanted to talk about are Prop 21 and graffiti, and that is also something covered in this Kids in the Law Guide for Parents. What thoughts do you have about graffiti and kids doing graffiti?
Graffiti and actually any vandalism.
Could
be as simple as a child breaking into his own room. Any vandalism, malicious mischief, any graffiti, anything of that type, and the child could lose their driver's license for a year in addition to other charges. Mm-hmm. So whereas there has to be a threshold damage amount to make it a felony, it may not be a serious offense. It may be that the court would give him a slap on the wrist because the conduct really wasn't that bad. Nevertheless, they're going to lose their license for a year if a petition is sustained, or even any petition sustained, even as a misdemeanor, even if the court's going to do something. The way around it is to avoid a sustained petition, avoid a judgment being issued.
By sustained petition means what?
If a child admits it, if they go to trial and lose, the petition sustained, it's going to be found true.
Okay.
They're going to be, in essence, the same as a guilty finding in adult.
All right.
And the way to avoid that is simply to negotiate around it, if you can, to something that does not result in a judgment. That means getting the child a granted diversion, getting the child on deferred entry of judgment. In non-legalese, that means working out a plea bargain where nothing is finalized and everything is set aside, either with an admission or without.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They set it aside 6 months or a year, depending on the program they're under, and come back and look at it anew. And if the child has earned their way to getting a dismissal, they will save themselves from that consequence.
I'd like to ask you, Andrew, if you would, what it is of, you know, in doing this program where the first half hour is the statewide version, which we send out to 15 other stations that air the half hour next week. Time goes very quickly. What do you want to get across in the first half hour before we take calls from listeners to you gentlemen on the air?
I draw upon a passage that's very early in the Kids in the Law Guide that we've been referencing, where it says, this does not mean that once your child reaches the age of majority, he or she gains all the rights and privileges available to adults. Some rights and responsibilities come earlier, while others come later. The passage that relates to rights and responsibilities coming earlier, I think that's something that people who don't do this type of law on a regular basis don't understand. They think kids are kids. They don't have specific legal rights aside from the fact that they are children of parents and parents exercise rights on their behalf. There are very specific areas that kids have legal rights at certain ages, and from where I sit, for very good reason. And two that I would hone in on are, first, the ability to access courts. There are certain types of legal actions that kids 12 or older can initiate on their own. For example, if a child 12 or older has been the victim of dating violence, an unhealthy relationship of their own, they can file for a restraining order with the court. A child who is in an unhealthy living arrangement can ask a probate judge to order a legal guardianship if that child is 12 or older. These are key legal rights that kids have who may not have proper parental support at home. They can access the system. at least as it relates to probate guardianship, parents are still going to have their due process rights to contend that they are providing appropriate care. So it strikes the right balance and gives these kids an opportunity to address the problems that are going on in their lives. And then the second piece would be the web of laws that we shorthandedly call the minor consent laws. Minors' ability to consent to certain types of medical and mental health treatment that they may be in need of in order to ensure that they have proper medical care, emotional care, mental health care. Things like being able to consent to mental health treatment, being able to consent to residential shelter services, being able to consent to drug and alcohol counseling, things that they may not have an adult in their life who can properly support them through. They are able to access these services depending on age and depending on whether certain criteria are met. And these services can really go a long way to not just treating their issues with their kids, but also allowing them to ultimately lead productive lives as adults.
Andrew, when you talk about someone being 12 or over accessing the system, how does someone of that age who's so young and probably is having a difficulty in his or her life, how does someone like this, generally speaking, access the system?
Well,
where do you go? Where does he, she go?
Well, at the risk of sounding selfish, in a county like Santa Clara, where an organization like the Law Foundation of Silicon Valley exists, kids are able to access legal representation and legal services so they can get advice as to what their rights are. And then if it's appropriate to pursue a legal action, they can have an attorney actually represent them in court, just like an adult.
Do they have to call your office ahead of time, or can they just walk in?
Depending on the day of the week, they can walk in or they can contact the intake line that I referenced earlier.
Why don't you give the intake line? Because I think that's very important. And let me ask you this. Certainly, as far as California is concerned, if someone – this program is heard throughout the state, and now because we're on the NPR satellite, heard beyond the state. But in terms of California, if someone in Southern California hears what you're talking about and says, gee, I really need help, can that person who's 12 or older call your office and get some referral to some other office in Southern California possibly?
Unfortunately, I think it's unlikely that we would be able to offer referrals for further away geographic regions. But for Northern California area, we have a fantastic intake specialist who has taken it upon herself to create essentially a referral database where she's able to send kids to even Santa Clara County kids who may be presenting a legal issue that we don't do, but also referrals that might be outside the county within our neighboring geographic region.
Give us the phone number for your office, would you?
Sure. The intake line phone number is area code 408-280-2416.
Let me repeat that for you. And this is, by the way, everybody, for the phone number for the Legal Advocates for Children and Youth, the Law Foundation of Silicon Valley, which is actually in San Jose, Santa Clara County, 408-280-2416. All right, it's our Call a Lawyer night. And again, I'm seeing Sal Timpano, who is our landlord-tenant guy, talking to one of the other attorneys there. I want you, if you've got a landlord-tenant problem, to call in. And let me give you that phone number again. We had a problem with our normal number, but I'm going to give this one to you, which supposedly is working, 415-841-4127, 415-841-4127. And, Martin, if you wouldn't mind, if you're listening to me, go in there and make sure that number is working, will you? Okay. All right, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. In a few minutes, I'll give you our phone number for you to call in and speak to my guests on the air, Bob Perez, Jeff Hayden, and Andrew Kane. I want to cover, before we end this statewide version, the first half hour, and for those of you listening to the program live, we will continue for another half hour. There is a problem, of course, that kids are confronted with of online predators. I want to talk a little bit about that. Bob Perez, since you are now the legal reviewer of the guides, what thoughts do you have on online predators of kids?
The problem that I have with that is that kids, given the fact that they're very they want privacy in the use of their, whether it be the computers or whether it be their cell phones. So it's difficult for a parent to discover whether we have any kind of an interaction by an adult or anyone else in that respect. And I don't know how a parent gets around that issue. Certainly years ago, we didn't have that. But now with social media, now with the cell phone use and very guarded use by minors, I want to try to find out how a parent goes about trying to discover whether this kind of activity is going on with a youngster. And like I said, maybe these gentlemen can let me know what their experiences have been in that whole area of interaction.
This is covered again. I decided, because I felt this was so valuable, that we would do a program starting with, as kind of the foundation of the program, the State Bar of California's guide called Kids and the Law. It's a consumer guide for parents on laws focusing on children and youth. And frankly, I feel it's valuable enough, not only for parents of youth in California, but also for parents who may be in any other state in California. And what am I saying? Any other state in California? Pardon me. Any other state in the United States, in that we are on the NPR satellite. This is a free guide. It's a number of pages, very well written, very carefully reviewed, and I think it's very helpful to parents of children and youth. If you would like one, it's free. The State Bar of California will send it to you. You can go to the website for the bar, calbar.ca/public/pamphlets.aspx. And fill out the order form, and you will get a free guide. I think it's worth it for you. What thoughts do you have on the predator situation, Andrew?
Having two young children myself, although thankfully still many years away from having an online presence, one of the things I just think about as a parent is the importance of diligence and having conversations with children at a young age about the importance of taking precautions to be safe when being online, and as parents informing their kids that they are going to be monitoring their use of social media and the internet and email, such that the parent can step in when certain things are going on that tend towards being less safe.
Okay. Hey, Jeff, do you have anything before we break for the second half hour? Any comments, brief comments at this point?
Last thing I would mention, we've talked about the less serious offenses and consequences and driver's licenses. What we haven't talked about is, on the more serious side, how easy it is for a young person today to be sent directly to adult court and face very serious consequences that are not discounted because of their youth. So that's something fairly new. It's been in existence for only about 15 years. And don't let people tell you that because you're under 18, you can go out and do things that they won't be able to. You'll be treated the same, and you're in for a miserable, life-changing experience.
All right, everybody. This is your legal rights. It's also our Call a Lawyer night, and I want to give you that Call a Lawyer number. I understand that it's working. I sure hope it's working. 415-841-4127, 415-841-4127. If you have questions about workers' compensation law, call in, give your name and phone number, and I will have Alice O'Sullivan call you back. She's not here tonight. If you have questions about family law for Call a Lawyer, call in, leave your name and phone number, and I will ask Janet Lee Frankel. Both of them are certified specialists, Alice in workers' compensation law, Janet in family law. If you would like to talk on the for Call a Lawyer with someone right now, we were doing this live program on October 28th, for criminal law, certified specialist Garrett Rutgers. For landlord-tenant law, we have Sal Timpano. I want to see Sal stop talking to one of the other attorneys and talk to you on the phone. For employment lawyer law, Susan Bluer. For tax law, real estate, and he's also a real estate broker, Frank Adam. For patent law, aviation law, lemon law, BBB arbitration, Ron Rohde. And tomorrow, if you're being hounded by creditors, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, is available. Again, no obligation on your part so whatsoever. He's available tomorrow, October 29th. from noon, pardon me, from 8 a.m. till noon at 800-477-3111, 800-477-3111. If you would like to talk to my guests on the air, the number, the magic number, is 866. It's toll-free, by the way, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Let me tell you who is here. We have Andrew Kane. He is the supervising attorney, Legal Advocates for Children and Youth, the Law Foundation of Silicon Valley. He's a certified specialist in juvenile law and child welfare by the National Association of Counsel for Children, former chair of the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. Jeff Hayden, who is a certified specialist in criminal law by the California Board of Legal Specialization. Jeff is also president of the San Mateo County Bar Association. And Bob Perez, legal reviewer of the State Bar's Consumer Guides, a former assistant executive director of the California State Bar and a retired San Francisco assistant district attorney. So if you'd like to talk with any one of them, the number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to try to find someone for you who's experienced in the legal area you're having the difficulty with. You'll be set up for a half an hour consultation. With minor exception, throughout California, for a half an hour consultation, you'll pay between $25 to $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral as a public service that the lawyer referral service is performing for the public. So that's available to you. And so please take advantage of the fact that we do have Call a Lawyer Night, 415-841-4127, off the air. And then on the air, if you want to speak to any one of my guests with respect to the law involving children and youth, that number is 866-798-8255. We have not talked about other things that might be of value to the listeners who are actually joining with us. One of the things that I think is very important is a section in the guide on page 9 that talks about sexual predators and cyber safety. Bob Perez, would you mind just talking a little bit some of the issues involved there and how parents might be able to protect their children on this and sexual predators and cyber safety?
Well, that's a difficult issue when you have kids. Having had five, I know the difficulty in trying to discover or to keep up to what their social interaction is. The one thing nowadays that I think we have to be aware of is that the children are much more advanced than we were as youngsters.
Much more sophisticated,
yeah. And yeah, much more knowledgeable with the use of various things such as a cell phone, the internet, and computers. And I don't know how one gets around that except as what Andrew pointed out is to maintain some type of surveillance or at least contact with the child or the youngster.
One of the things I note in the guide here, Kids and the Law guide, is that it's saying don't have in your child's room, if your child has his or her own private room, a computer. It should not be in a child's separate room.
That's going to be a difficult situation.
Yeah, there's going to be some fighting in the house.
And I think most parents, and logically so, we try to be pals with the youngsters, and we try to bring them along and not establish any kind of a hierarchy of oppression, as most youngsters feel goes on. But the reality is that we do have to remain sensitive to the fact that they may engage in certain behavior or interaction with other people, whether it be in the internet, by cell phone, or otherwise. We have to be constantly vigilant of what goes on and what interacts with them. And a lot of that involves talking to the youngster to see where they're at on a daily basis and seeing what accomplishments they're making in school and what their interests are. I think what we're into nowadays, we let the youngsters entertain themselves very often, whether it be the television set, cell phones, or otherwise. So it's for us to remain diligent and encounter any kind of acts that we think may be lent to suspicion and more investigation.
Let me turn, Jeff, what other issues are of concern to you? I mean, your practice as a certified specialist in criminal law on the defense side is certainly not totally with regard to youth defense. But what I know you do some juvenile law defense. What other thoughts do you have that you'd like to get across to our audience?
What troubles me most is when I see a young person sent directly to adult court. Mm-hmm. There's a presumption that most people hold that young people are going to go to juvenile court. They're going to be dealt with accordingly, where the law is designed to try to protect them and to try ultimately to rehabilitate them whenever possible. And I've seen young people as young as 14 get direct filed in adult court. I had one in an assault case where he drew a sentence with no prior record of 10 years in state prison with a housing order.
At what age?
14.
14, okay.
It's not that unusual in the state of California. Most wow. counties are direct filing if the offense is serious enough. And at this point in time, under current law, the prosecutor has complete discretion whether to file in adult court or juvenile court for most moderate to serious offenses. And in some serious offenses, they don't have discretion. They have to file in adult court. They can't file in juvenile. If you have some of the more severe crimes that we hear about, a rape in concert, mm-hmm. or someone who actually committed a murder, not someone else who was along for the ride, but the actual person who did it, they have no choice but to file in adult court, and that person may be in for years or maybe for life.
Mm. Wow. Andrew, what thoughts do you have on this?
So I wanted to build a little bit on what Jeff was saying just now, as well as a little bit earlier, too. A juvenile who commits an offense, it can have very long-lasting consequences for that juvenile. And the purpose of the juvenile justice system is ultimately public safety, public protection, but it's also rehabilitation of the youth who is before the court. And youth will be offered services. They will have terms of probation that they are required to comply with. But my opinion is, should they successfully rehabilitate, should they complete their terms of probation, they should not be forced to have the consequences of an act that took place when they were 13, 14, 15 hang over their head for years to come and on into their adulthood. So there has been this movement within the legislature in the last two or three years to really strengthen the laws around sealing of juvenile records, such that youth who do successfully go through all of their programs and do treatment can essentially eliminate that from their record for most purposes, such that when they go to apply for a job or perhaps they look for an opportunity that requires some type of state licensure, that they can honestly say that they don't have any type of record. And I think that's a very critical positive movement. One vestige that still I think needs to be addressed actually relates back to Prop 21, which was discussed a bit earlier, and that has to do with provisions that prevent sealing for certain types of offenses. And I can think back to a recent opinion from the 6th District Appellate Court in California about a young man who I actually happened to personally know this young man's sister, who he served our military with distinction, went over to the Middle East. He came back and he tried to have his prior juvenile record sealed, But because of the language that was incorporated into the code via Prop 21 many, many years ago, he wasn't able to do so. And the Court of Appeal, in its opinion, essentially begged the legislature or the voters to do something to change the current law, but they felt their hands were tied. And so I think it's important for anybody who's working with youth who have committed a juvenile offense and who have successfully rehabilitated to make sure the youth is aware of their rights to have their records sealed and ultimately to have their records cleared such that they are able to not have that hanging over their heads.
You know, one of the reasons that we're not getting many calls tonight, unfortunately, is that this is the first game of the World Series.
Second game.
Just for everybody, the New York Mets are 1, the Kansas City Royals are 4. It's the top of the 8th with the Mets batting. All right, everybody. There's always something that's going to compete when we're trying to do something really significant. If you'd like to talk to my guests on the air, 866-798-8255. If you're a parent and have an issue, if you're a youngster and you have an issue that you'd like to present to my guests, I welcome you to call 866-798-8255. And we have several attorneys who I appreciate very much for being here for Call Lawyer Night. They're not getting many calls because of the World Series. And that number, if you want to talk with them, is 415-841-4127, off the air. And I want to thank them. Again, if you have calls or questions about workers' compensation law, call 415-841-4127. Leave your name and phone number, and I will have Alice O'Sullivan call you back. If you have a family law question, do the same. Call, leave your name and phone number. I'll ask Janet Lee Frankel to call you back. In the studio here, or actually in the conference room for criminal law, we have Garrett Rutgers, who's a certified specialist in criminal law. For landlord-tenant law, it's Sal Timpano. For employment law, it's Susan Bluer. For tax law, real estate, he's also a real estate broker, Frank Adam. For patent law, aviation law, lemon law, and BBB, Better Business Bureau Arbitration, Ron Rohde. And tomorrow, if you're being chased by creditors and you want to see what can I do, certified specialist in bankruptcy law Leon Bayer is available at his office in Los Angeles from 8 a.m. to noon. That's tomorrow, Thursday, October 29th. His number, 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. If you get a busy signal or if you get a recording, I should say, leave your name and phone number and Mr. Bayer will call you back. Tell him that you've been listening to Your Legal Rights. All of these attorneys are doing this as a public service. There is no obligation on your part whatsoever. These attorneys are doing this to benefit you, so take advantage of it if you would. All right, we have William. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you guys so much. I very much appreciate you taking my call.
Great to have you.
I grew up in a neighborhood where basically I was very lucky to be able to get out and to be able to go on to go to college, and I had a very supportive family that helped me. But basically all of my friends have been incarcerated at one point, and the one thing that I was trying to do is I want to personally try to get more involved with the youth because I know it definitely helps having people that come from the same situation. And basically, and also my dad's a lawyer by chance, so I mean, I'm somewhat in the thing, but I guess what is your best, recommendation for somebody who has no knowledge, but wants to be able to get, active to be able to help the youth more?
Where do you live or work, William?
I live and work in San Francisco.
SF. Okay. Let me get some comments from people for you. And what kind of work do you do?
I went to school. I had a degree in history, but at the moment I'm managing a local restaurant franchise.
Oh, are you? Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for calling. Let me see if I can get some thoughts for you on this. I have some very knowledgeable people here. And by the way, everybody, when you call in on this program, always have, or whether you're calling in or not, always have a pen or pencil and piece of paper to write down numbers. Bob, do you have some suggestions for William? And William, you can take this by turning your radio back up, if you would.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling.
Well, in the city of San Francisco, there are a number of programs that are available to people who want to perhaps do an internship. Given the fact that he's indicated that he's gone on to higher education and he wants to become more involved with perhaps the community organization that also assists youngsters. But I think the best stop in terms of making contact would perhaps be with the probation department of San Francisco.
Obviously,
they're engaged in providing youngsters with more promising careers or education. And I would say that would be my first stop.
Any other comments here? Yeah, Jeff, please.
You might also take a look in the mirror and wonder who it is you want to be working with. If you want to work with troubled youth and try to send them a chance to get back, probation is probably your best stop. If you want to get to kids that haven't gone that route, that may be looking to alternatives, a Boys and Girls Club, things of that nature, talking to groups for kids that haven't gotten astray, or talking through school. You've got a lot to offer as a mentor, separate and apart. And the reality is, you can't stem the flood of kids that go astray. You could make a whole lot of difference to one.
Yeah, yeah. Very good point. Very good point. Any comments, Andrew?
The only two things I would add is that for youth who are in the juvenile dependency system, which is youth who have been victims of abuse and neglect, there is a court-appointed special advocates program in most, if not all, counties across the state. It's an excellent opportunity to volunteer and make a difference in an individual child or maybe a sibling group's life. You could specifically ask to work with teenagers. All the data shows, unfortunately, that youth in the juvenile dependency system have a higher propensity for ultimately having contact with the juvenile justice system than their peers who are not in the foster care system. So that might be a good opportunity for you. And although it's in Santa Clara County, there might be something analogous in San Francisco. We have a program called Fresh Lifelines for Youth that provides legal education and mentorship opportunities for adults who are interested in working directly with youth in the juvenile justice system. So they go into juvenile hall, to our ranch, and work with kids on probation on some of those issues. So it might be worth checking with probation to see if San Francisco has a similar program.
Okay. All right. Let's do this. Let me, again, the foundation of this program is the guide, the State Bar of California's guide, Kids and the Law. It's a consumer guide for parents on laws focusing on children and youth. A very fine piece of work for parents of children and youth. It's free. It's available to anyone in the United States. And let me give you the website if you'd like to actually take a look at it and then also ask to get a copy of it. And that is, let me just give it to you at this point so I don't make any mistake on this and make sure that I am giving you the correct information on this. Let me just find it on the page that I have given you before, and I am looking for it, if you will bear with me just a minute. It is calbar.ca/public/pamphlets.aspx. And if you go to that, and you can take a look at the guide itself, it's a good number of pages. If you like it, you can then hit the button and you can order one, and it'll be sent to you free. All right, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I had a question. I want to make a comment about the people under 18, and you know how your record gets sealed for certain crimes and not others. And in my opinion, if like say if you rape somebody, like you're a guy, you find a woman at night, knock her down, rape her. To me, it doesn't matter if you're 13 or 17 or 30. That should stick with you for life, and everyone should know that you did that, and that because that's pretty serious. And I feel like the same way for murder. You know, if you kill someone, people need to know that throughout your life that you have a propensity to some dark things. On the other hand, if you know other things, you know, like maybe stealing from a store. I mean, kids are excitable. They tip over porta potties. They do things. They break windows, and they can get into stuff. And I'm all for the, you know, that stuff being sealed, you know, they can have an interaction with the law and be kind of like, well, okay, maybe I shouldn't steal stuff from stores or whatever.
Well, Joe, let me get some comments on the first part of your comments, because I think there may be some response to that. Thank you very much for calling. If you'll turn your radio back up, I want to get some comments. Who wants to start on this? Jeff, do you? Okay.
Sure. The law does have a list of serious offenses for which you can't get your record sealed. Joe, you might take solace in knowing that it's not that far astray from what you just described. On those most serious offenses, you won't get your record sealed. And in fact, if you have one of those offenses when you're 16 or older, it's a strike on your record forever. Mm-hmm. However, on the most serious offenses, as you just listed, certain types of rapes, a gang rape, for example, rape in concert with other people, a murder where you're actually the murderer, not only are you not going to have your juvenile record sealed for one of those, but the likelihood is pretty strong that you are going to be filed in adult court and you're never going to see the inside of a juvenile court. Mm-hmm. You will face adult prison. You will face the same consequences, mm-hmm. whether you're 14, 15, 25, 50. You're going to face that same life imprisonment.
One of the things that Joe believes is that with these serious crimes, this should follow the person for his or her life, for the rest of their life. With a conviction like what we're talking about right now, and no chance for rehabilitation, and state prison does not really give rehabilitation. So if anyone gets out, is not in prison for life and gets out, they're not going to get a job. What comments do you have with regard to rehabilitation and the value of that when we take young persons who may be 13 or 14 and do a heinous crime? Are we going to say that that person should not have the opportunity to have rehabilitation and come back into society? Bob, do you have some comments? You were a prosecutor for many years. What do you say?
Well, I dealt with juveniles at an early age in my career. I was a probation officer in Los Angeles as well as a gang counselor in East Los Angeles and other areas, and particularly Watts. And I saw these kinds of kids having problems or committing crimes either by way of gang interaction or maybe a crime for which motive I could never explain. I had one youngster who, a good kid, but very much a kid who followed others and didn't have a will of his own. Unfortunately, he announced to me he killed not a derelict, but a person who was living under a bridge, and that was behavior that I never had anticipated in seeing in him. But the reality is that kids sometimes commit crimes that are more to gain stature amongst others, and to saddle them with a life burdens of never achieving much beyond that point, other than receiving a penalty, such as incarceration for a number of years as a juvenile, and then going on into adulthood. I think there has to be a remedy or a balancing of what can be afforded to these youngsters. Now with gang activity that we're seeing now at very young years, there has to be some addressing, some remedy or some course of action that can be taken to encourage rehabilitation. I know it's difficult, but it can be done, and it should be done.
Any comments elsewhere? Yes, Andrew King. Please.
Yeah, just maybe to clarify the earlier comments that I made, the big issue for me is that when we're talking about the offenses, and particularly the list of offenses that Jeff noted earlier, there's no judicial discretion. There's no ability for a judge to look at the totality of the circumstances that have occurred over a period of 5-10 years after the offense has been committed and to be able to say that this person has taken steps, dramatic steps in some instances, to rehabilitate themselves and take it even one step further to become a really productive member of society, and therefore eliminate that past offense from their record. And so these are not youth that we're talking about who have paid no dues for what they did. These are all youth who have faced consequences, who have who have worked through those, become productive members of society. And what I would submit is that judges should have the discretion to be able to say, mm-hmm. you, youth, now young adult, you have taken the steps necessary to show that you've rehabilitated, and you should be able to have the opportunity to go on and live a normal life and not have this hanging over your head forever.
Jeff, please.
Traditionally, these matters would have first gone to a juvenile court. They would have reviewed five factors. And after looking at the degree of criminal sophistication, whether the minor can be rehabilitated before they lose jurisdiction, their previous history of delinquency, whether they've tried other things with the minor, and circumstances of the offense itself, that would be weighed before they would decide whether the child went to adult court or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the presumption on these offenses was always that they would be sent to adult, but there was always that chance to look and see, is this someone who can be saved? And we're talking about people whose brains haven't developed. As a practical matter, we know those brains don't develop, none of ours, until at least 25 years of age, and some studies have said a little older than that still. So you've got somebody who's still developing, has been led astray, and may be redeemable. And if you've got somebody who's 14, 15 years old, we could do a lot in the way of punishment. We could keep them locked up in the prison for juveniles for another 15 years,
yeah.
or close to it.
Yeah.
There's a lot we could do and still rehabilitate them and have most of their life working for us, working for the betterment of the people around them, instead of throwing them away and having us spending the rest of our lives supporting them for the rest of theirs.
Let me give some phone numbers here and some information to you, website information that I think is very valuable. Again, the State Bar of California's Kids in the Law, a consumer guide for parents. If you would like to get a free copy, wherever you are in the United States, if you go to the Internet and to the bar's website, www.calbar.ca.gov/public/pamphlets.aspx. Take a look at it. If you'd like one, you can get one free. You can fill out the order form and email it back to the State Bar. This is something that was brought to me. The San Francisco School District is inaugurating a mentor program, and this might be for Joe, who called in, who was interested. Joe, who called in.
I believe it was William.
William.
I'm very sorry. It was William. Excuse me. It's inaugurating a mentor program to support youth, and if you'd like to check into this, take a look at sfusd.edu. That's for the website, sfusd.edu, San Francisco Unified School District.edu, and find out more about that. And finally, with respect to the Legal Advocates of Children and Youth, the Law Foundation of Silicon Valley, I want to give you that number again because I think it's valuable for those of you at least in the North Bay area, Santa Clara County in the North Bay. Area code 408-280-2416. Area code 408-280-2406. I must tell you, everybody, that we have come, unfortunately, to the end of the program. I want to thank you, gentlemen, very much. Bob Perez, who is now the legal reviewer for the State Bar's Guides, former assistant executive director of the State Bar, retired San Francisco assistant district attorney. Bob, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Andrew Kane, former chair of the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and now the supervising attorney for Legal Advocates for Children and Youth, the Law Foundation of Silicon Valley. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Chuck.
And Jeff Hayden, who has been a great friend of this program, a certified specialist in criminal law and president of the San Mateo County Bar Association. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Chuck. Always a pleasure.
Great to have you here. By the way, everybody, for next week, I want to let you know we're going to be doing a discussion of workers' compensation insurance fraud, automobile insurance fraud, and health and disability insurance fraud. My guests are members of the San Mateo County, California District Attorney's Office, Michael Wendler, Deputy DA in charge of insurance fraud, and insurance fraud inspector Richard Hong. And this segment, my people who are with me on this, program engineer Debbie Kennedy and production assistant Martin McLean, have been helping on the program. This segment of the program has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and the Family Law Section of the State Bar. Additional funding for this program is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the San Mateo County Bar Association, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thanks so much for listening to Your Legal Rights. And I hope you join us next time. Thanks so much. I'm Chuck Finney.